This is the HopeCast Network. Stories and shows you actually want to listen to.
What's up, work advisors? You are listening to the HopeCast Network, and this is Work Advice for Me. My name is Brad, and I gotta say, I am glad you chose to hit play today, because you are in for a treat. Today, we have one of my favorite actresses. I mean, she's actually my favorite at this point, because she has been on here. This will be the third time. You guys have heard me say three-timer, and you're like, well, I've got some blowback on that, because you've only heard her twice. But you're like, Brad, you keep saying three-timer. Yes, I've talked to her and had her on three times. But we have yet to play the actual long-form chat. Christine Lakin is incredible. She is one of my favorites of all time because she came on this show in the infancy when I was a little more nervous, a little more green. Y'all can tell there's been a shift in the show. I was so nervous. They're calling me. I was like, oh my gosh, and Christine Lincoln is calling me right now. We chatted for a while. It was very encouraging. Last time she went on here, we were talking about Christmas stuff with B. And I was pitching Christmas carols tonight. Yeah. Out of my brain. Christine Lincoln, if you don't know her, she's been Step by Step. And I'm pretty sure you'd be bringing that role. I want to say Peacocks. If you have Peacocks, subscribe to that. She also has podcast out right now that we want you to subscribe to. Yes, it's Keenan and Lakin. Yeah, I think that's right. Keenan and Lakin. Please subscribe to that because she is going to recap everything about Step by Step. Yeah, I paused there for a second. But yeah, it's called Keenan Lakin Give You Deja Vu. I need to make sure I get the title right because I got work advice on my brain. Keenan Lakin Give You Deja Vu. Now, Stacey Keenan is on there with her. And I got to be honest, I like Stacey Keenan. I had a crush on her. And I really liked Christine Lakin, who is my age. It's not creepy, dudes. I'm not a creepy guy. She was pretty back in the day. They're both pretty. They're both beautiful women now. Although, there's only one beautiful woman in my life, and that is my wife. And let me tell you guys, my wife right now is making a coconut cake, and that is manna from heaven. Guys, find you a wife that can cook and bake and listen and love. Man, I tell you, I hit the jackpot with my wife. But before we get to Christine Lakin, who, I gotta be honest, one of my favorites of all time for the show, I want to remind you, please like and subscribe on iTunes and Spotify. We know you love the show. Tell your mama, tell your daddy, tell your kids, tell your friends. Follow Work Advice for Me. It's fun. You guys can tell. We've really grown in our network. We have new shows coming down the pipeline right now, which we're really excited about. We're working on bringing other people on to have shows where you don't just hear me all the time because you might get like, I don't want to hear this guy, man. He's a turd. No. I want you to enjoy every show you listen to that drops on this network. So, also, if you have a question, you can slide into our DMs on Instagram. Follow us on Instagram, Work Advice for Me, or you can email workadviceforme@gmail.com. We have a question, and this is from Mark in Kansas City. Mark, I've never been to Kansas City, but I've always heard their barbecue is good, and I like the song Kansas City. It's a great song. Not a fan of the Chiefs, though. I'm a Panther fan, so I can't really like the Chiefs. Mark writes, Brad, if you could be a magician, what would you want to have disappear? That's a great question, Mark. Oh, my gosh. My bills. I want them to disappear. I don't mind the trolls that come on and want to bash me or anything like that. I don't get that, really, but you control me. It doesn't matter. But I want to disappear the bills. So if we could do a magic trick where I disappear bills, I'm all for it. What about you, Mark? Email me back and let me know what you would want to have disappear if you could be a magician. Yeah, Wes was pretty awesome. Hope you guys enjoyed that chat because he's a pretty cool dude. I got to be honest. But anyway, with that being said, I know you've been waiting. it's time for us to step by step back in time with Christine Lakin.
So what was your childhood like?
My childhood was really idyllic. And it was also weird. It was not unusual, I suppose. So I moved to Atlanta when I was 6. I did a lot of singing and dancing. I was really into theater. That was kind of like my sport. My mom and dad, I'm an only child, and my mom and dad were very supportive of the things that I loved to do. So lots of running me around to dance classes and drama classes and theater, and I sort of fell into acting in Atlanta. Got an agent, was doing commercials by the time I was 8 or 9. Just really loved it, honestly. I was never pressured into it. I don't come from a Hollywood family. It was something that I wanted to do, and my parents would just really gave me, you know, every opportunity to do that. And I did all the other things like swim team and some soccer and school and plays and all that. And then when I was 12, I was discovered by an agent from Los Angeles and did a couple auditions for her and eventually came out to Los Angeles to audition for the role of Al Lambert on Step by Step. I got that job and that really changed the course of my life. My mom and I came out to LA when I was 12 and started working. And for the next 7 years, I went back and forth from Los Angeles to Atlanta. And I would come out for 3 weeks at a time and I would work on the show and then I would fly back to Atlanta and I would have a totally normal life and I would go back to school for a week of hiatus. And I did that, you know, pretty much up until college. So definitely kind of the best of both worlds, I think. I think it definitely gave me a lot of normalcy and a real grounding and which has been, I think, really helpful as my career has continued in Hollywood. But I also had a real education in what it's like to work in television from a very early age, which is has been, you know, very, I think, probably the biggest asset to my continuing career.
What was it like for you when you got to go out, when you were discovered and you got to go out to California? What was that feeling like for you and your family at that moment?
When we first came out to Los Angeles to meet with the agent and do some auditions. It was just, again, it was just all fun. There was nothing on the line. It was sort of, hey, it's ever in LA kind of thing. And at that time there was no Zoom, you know, there was no real way to audition in another city unless you had what they called a demo tape. So when we first came out, it was on my spring break and it was filled with a lot of other fun stuff, like going to Universal Studios and things like that. It was just really no, very low stakes. When I got the audition and then like subsequently got the job right after, it very much felt like a whirlwind. They saw my tape. I came out the next day. I auditioned. And by that night, I had the job. And we started, 2 days later, we started filming the pilot of Step by Step. So it was very much just not really sure what was even going on. Didn't really understand the stakes of the show. Was told this is just a pilot, it probably won't even get picked up, like don't count your chickens, all of that stuff. And then when the show got picked up and we realized, oh my gosh, this could have some legs, or at least for a little while, we have to figure this out. I mean, I think it was much more logistically on my parents to figure out how to find a rental apartment, how to get a car, like how to furnish the apartment, like where to have it, where to go, you know, how to make it all kind of work. I was just sort of along for the ride and kind of loving every moment of it. I'd been on enough sets to where I understood, okay, I'm going to go to a trailer and there's going to be other kids from the cast and we're all going to have a tutor. And that wasn't really that new to me, but the life of doing it once the show got picked up and was doing well and kind of doing it over and over again and realizing, oh, I live in California in this apartment for most of my time in the fall. And then I go back to Atlanta and have a totally different life whenever I'm there. I mean, it was definitely like a back and forth balance. But I mean, I was such a fan of TGIF. Like I was the demographic for that lineup. So when you told me that Step by Step got picked up and it was going to be in the TGIF lineup, I mean, I about died. I had been watching TGIF for years with my friends. So I was pretty stoked to say the least.
Yeah, you and I think are around the same age because I was a very big fan of TGIF also. I was trying to think what the shows were that were on when it debuted. It was Full House, right? And
I believe it was Full House, Step by Step, Perfect Strangers, and I can't remember what the fourth one was in the lineup at that time. Eventually it became Full House, Boy Meets World, Step by Step, Perfect Strangers, and then Perfect Strangers finally went off and everything came on, and there was a Dinosaurs moment in there at some point.
I never liked that show. I wasn't into that show. Was it Family Matters? That's what it was, right?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, that was your date, right, Urkel?
Yep, that was my date. Yeah. So I think you're right. I think Family Matters actually might have been on at the same time, Step by Step, or even maybe a year before. And then Boy Meets World sort of rounded out that lineup. Many of those shows were Miller Boyette shows. They were all produced by not Full House, but actually Full House was, but a lot of them were produced by the same producers. So they sort of had they had cornered the market on Saturdays.
they had it made. They were, I like Perfect Strangers. I was always a Balky fan. So, yeah, I always loved Balky. It was great. It was a very underrated show, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It was really funny. What was it like for you to go back to Atlanta and get noticed? What was that like for the first time for you?
It was definitely a little weird. I mean, fame has always been strange to me. I have never been super comfortable, I think, with it. I think there's some people who are like, I'm going to be famous one day. And they just wait for that moment to happen. And when it happens, I guess it feels super gratifying. I was never seeking that. I love to perform, you know? And I can say there was probably a certain amount of the live energy of the applause and theater. And you feel that with a sitcom because you film it in front of a live audience. Having that reaction is something that I really like. I like the energy of that. But the fame part was just, it took some getting used to, you know, and I was kind of like, I wanted to always be really gracious because I was so appreciative that people loved the show and loved my character or wanted to get close or wanted to ask for an autograph. Like I knew that meant that what I had done and what our show meant to them meant the same that as so many shows meant to me. So I got it from the fan perspective, and I always wanted to give what I would have wanted, you know, from like some of my TV stars I grew up with. So from that point of view, I definitely always tried to be as open and kind and gracious as I could be. But on the other side of it, you know, it can be really strange. I mean, and I think some actors feel this way, and I'm sure some athletes feel this way. You're just trying to do your job, but everybody wants sort of a piece of you, or they kind of want to they feel like they want to get to know you, or they're staring at you, and you can't figure out why these people are staring at you, and then you realize, oh my gosh, it's because they recognize me. And like that realization that anywhere at any time someone can recognize you is kind of an invasive realization that you have no anonymity anymore. And you can't really go places like malls or roller rinks without maybe getting mobbed for autographs or being asked a million questions. And after a while, you know, that gets maybe a little, it takes away from, I think, the joy of the simple thing that you're just setting out to go do. So not that anybody's crying for actors, certainly, but you know, I it definitely, for me, just kind of took some getting used to. And when you're in high school or even like junior high, I'd say, and you go to like, I'll say a high school football game, and all of my friends, of course, knew that I was an actor, and in the fame or the shine of that had worn off long ago. So everyone treated me, you know, very normally. But when you go and there's like a rival high school and you're playing against them, and kind of the rumor mill gets around, and of course people recognize me, it was a little embarrassing because everyone wants to blend in sixth or seventh or eighth or ninth grade. Nobody wants to be the one who's sticking out. So in that way, sometimes I did feel like a little embarrassed because I didn't want anyone to think that I thought I was better than anyone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I always tried to kind of, I tried to change that narrative a lot.
You spoke earlier about about the thrill of the live audience was, excuse me, was there a time where, I mean, was it hard for you to bring it every time? Was there moments where you're like, I'm a kid, it's just, I'm not really feeling it tonight, but I got to go out there and I got to perform?
No. I have always been that person that is just like, you could not stop me. You could not stop me from trying to put on a play in front of your face. Not really. I mean, I have always been really passionate about what I do, and I loved working on that show. I never really felt a time when I was like, you know, I mean, there was definitely exhaustion at times, but I loved the job so much. I think the only time it was really hard was when you get sick. And whenever you're sick, you just don't feel like doing anything. But imagine getting like the flu or strep throat or whatever it is, and there's no real like, you're not coming to work. It's mm-hmm. just, that's how it was back then anyway. Because there was no like shooting around it. I think the only time we shot around it is when somebody got the chicken pox. Because clearly that was like a visual thing, but at the time they could not, you know, cover really even with makeup. So, I remember having the flu. I remember having strep throat, and you just kind of take as many days off as you can and learn the lines and sort of have to stand and do the blocking and sort of watch what you can. And then you got to get up and perform when it's time to go. And then you go back and you lay down. And they bring the doctor and they make sure that, you know, you're not like, there's nothing like seriously wrong. And they usually give you a B12 shot and they say, go get them. So that's, time is money. No one waits around in show business to feel their best. You have to kind of just go.
So what you brought up yesteryear working compared to today, you're a director, you direct. I know you've directed shows on the Goldbergs, right? What's the difference?
I have, yeah.
What's the difference between now in making a sitcom compared to when you were on in the 90s?
Gosh, I think there are a lot of differences. And I think a lot of the things that we're more aware of and that have changed now are for the better. I think that there is more inclusivity in casting. I think that, you know, there's definitely shows that hold up comedically and there's shows that don't hold up comedically, jokes and so forth. I think that, you know, with the advent of COVID, what was really interesting is that I worked as a director all through COVID, starting in 2020, and the protocols and the length that unions went to and that productions went to keep people safe on those sets was really extreme. So it's interesting now because I think because of that, nobody wants you to come to work sick now anymore at all. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it's COVID or not. They actually ask you to please, and now if it's an actor again and it's not COVID, you know, they're going to, as much as you can do, they're going to ask you to please come and do, but they also don't want to run you into the ground and they don't want the rest of the casting crew to get sick because it does, whether it's, you know, strep or the flu, it spreads like wildfire. So people are generally just a little more attuned to that. And I think a little more sensitive to moving things around. You know, the difference between what I direct and what I worked on, Step by Step was a multicam comedy, and our schedule, that is the dream schedule, honestly, for any crew or any actor, because you start out, it's usually a 5-day work week, sometimes it's even a 4-day work week, and you do a couple days of rehearsal, which is like a 9-to-5 kind of job, and then you have, you know, run-throughs and all of that, and then on your third day, you do camera blocking. That can be a little bit of a longer day where all the cameras come in and everybody gets the mark. And then you have a show day and you come in late that day, like noon, and you run through the show with the cameras and the cast and the hair and the makeup and everything. You get notes, you go have a break, you come back, you shoot the show, you're done by maybe 9 o'clock at night, and then you go do it all over again. When you're shooting a show like The Goldbergs, it's what they call a single camera comedy. We use two cameras, but traditionally it's called a single camera comedy, but it's totally different. There's no studio audience. you rehearse and shoot a scene as you go. And it's a lot more involved in terms of the types of coverage we get, how much footage we roll. So, and the work days can be really long. Sometimes we're on location, sometimes there's stunts, sometimes there's dances, montages, you name it. But those can be anywhere. Usually it's like a 12-hour day, but I've worked up to 16 hours on shows.
Oh.
Yeah, and that's a 5-day work week per episode. And as a director, I have another 3 on top of that where I'm prepping the episode and figuring out what the blocking's going to be, talking to production designers, costumes, writers, tone meetings, producers. It's a very involved job. So, I mean, I think that's the biggest difference between those two types of shows. But, you know, I also think, I think there's been a lot that's changed just in general in the TV industry. And as we're seeing now, I think we're having to kind of catch up to where technology and where viewership is in terms of how directors and writers and actors and everyone is represented. So it's a big time of change again.
How, you know, you brought up working a 16-hour day. It made me think, how do you balance being a wife and a mother with work? Because that's a hard balance for anyone in what we do, in any job. How do you balance it?
That's a great question. I mean, balance is really the operative word, isn't it? It is hard. It's hard. I won't lie. When I am working on a TV show and I'm prepping, now, again, because the advent of COVID, I can do a lot of my meetings, thankfully, from home, because a lot of our meetings have turned to Zoom, which is kind of great, because I think everybody can sort of plug in from where they are, whether they're on set or from home. And so that's been actually really nice. It's made it so that some days when I'm prepping, I can still take my kids to school, see them in between meetings when they get home, or even take them to an after-school activity. When I'm actually on set working, I see them very little, and that's kind of just the name of the game. So my husband is amazing. My parents are super helpful, and we also have help that comes in and helps us when we need it, because my husband works as well. So when I'm done with all of that, and I have, you know, a week or two where I've seen my kids very little, I try my very best on that Saturday after I finish wrap. That is a family day. That's Saturday, Sunday. It's just whatever they want to do. And we spend the whole weekend together. I want to make sure that they know that I'm there. I do, you know, notes in the lunches. I try to, even if I've been up since 5 a.m. and I get home and I'm there for bedtime at 7 p.m., I will put them to bed because I want them to know that I'm there. So it's, you know, it's hard. But the other part of that is I might work a couple of weeks and then not have another gig for a couple months. So I am back on mommy duty. And I make sure that I try to be there as much as possible, whether it's like volunteering at school or going to the birthday parties or doing the play dates or taking them to the park, you know. So I try to be really hands-on in between all the other stuff.
So if you could only do one for the rest of your life, acting or directing, which would you choose?
I think at this point in my life, I'd probably choose directing, because it's sort of the newer thing in my life, and I'm still learning, and I feel like I just get better and better at it. And I just love the camaraderie in that job. I think it appeals to a lot of my skill set, and it fires my brain in ways that is just really satisfying to me. And I'm someone who's also just loved the backstage, no matter what it is, doing a TV show or I was acting in, you know, a play. Those things were great. The performing was really fun. But what I really loved was all the antics backstage. You know, the family that you make, the team sport. I mean, I talked about doing that as a kid, whether it was, you know, dancing or in a theater company. I just love the team sport mentality. And I think as a director, I get to be like the coach of the team. And that to me is just, it's just the most fun. And I love being able to have a vision, communicate that vision, and help see it become a reality. And I understand actors so well that that's one of the other joys, is being able to figure out, you know, how do I communicate this note in a way that I would want to receive? And I think for some directors who have never been an actor, that can be a pretty big jump. For me, I feel like, well, having been in this business for so long, at the very least, maybe I can help get a performance out of an actor or make them feel as supported and comfortable in ways that sometimes in certain jobs I didn't feel. And I love being able to do that.
Are you still close to your castmates from the show Step by Step?
I'm really close to Stacey. She and I talk pretty regularly. And I communicate with Suzanne and Patrick via different platforms. And I love hearing from them. And, you know, a lot of the other people from the show actually, after the show ended, left the business and decided to go do other things. And, you know, we've kind of, a lot of us have kind of lost touch. But I still see some of the writers, and I still, you know, communicate with some of the producers that live in town. So that's really nice.
Okay, so I have to ask you this question because, you know, we're chatting. I just watched recently, for the first time ever, The Hottie and the Naughty. I watched this movie, and they made you look so disgusting in this movie. Like, what was the makeup like for this? How long did you spend in the makeup chair for this movie? Because watching it, I was like, you're unrecognizable in this movie.
Isn't it wild?
It is so wild.
I know. It's such a silly, funny movie. I had so much fun making it, though, I have to say. We really had a blast. That was one of the things that appealed to me about it. I know that sounds maybe crazy, but I really, again, I've always felt like a character actor who was never put up for character roles. I think like I've been marketed the wrong way my whole life. I loved that process. It took about, I want to say, I think we got it down about an hour and a half, but it took about 2 hours. It was really, you know, the wig was the hardest part because I had to take a good amount of my hair and slack it down and put this like balding sort of wig on with different hair. Then there was a teeth prosthetic, which was just worked like a retainer, basically. And then they would paint teeth, and then they had some moles and, you know, some different like acne and rosacea and some big eyebrows. And but it was really fun. I mean, I just really enjoyed it. And, yeah, I know it's a wild look though, for sure. People were like, could not believe it was me.
Oh, I was shocked. I'm like, wow, I did not realize it at first. And you just look totally different. And everything bad that could happen to a woman looks-wise, they gave it to you in this movie.
100%. They 100%
did,
yep.
I mean, talk about creativity. I can just imagine, what can we make her look like today that's really horrible? And I love how it took the doctor in the movie changing you for Nate to realize that he liked and loved June. So
I know. It's a pretty silly, you know, kind of vapid concept, honestly. But, I mean, we tried really hard to find, you know, more substance underneath that for our characters. But, you know, as far as, like, kind of, I don't know, silly romantic comedies go, if you can buy into just the ridiculousness of all of it, it's kind of a fun watch.
Oh, it's a fun watch for sure. The toenail scene was really gross. I'll say that.
So gross.
Oh, that was the gross. They had you do every gross thing. I was shocked. I got to be honest, Christine. Please do not be offended by this. I was shocked they didn't have a fart scene. I was amazed. The yoga scene, I thought for sure there was going to be one. There wasn't. they made you do every other thing bad. But it was funny. I can relate to Nate. Because I had an autographed photo of you in my drawer, even as an adult. You know how you kept, I'm just kidding, I really didn't. But I like how June kept the Valentine in her adult life. Yeah. It was like right there, you know, and I would pull my drawer and see your autographed photo there, and I'd say, Step by Step, I love it. And I would close the drawer. And but yeah, it's a cute movie, and I would have to bring that up to you because I mean, when am I ever going to get a chance to ask someone about Hottie and the Naughty that was on the in the movie? So
I mean, totally.
Best part of the movie. You were by far the best part of the movie, for sure.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
You definitely brought. Now, a few more questions before we close. One, you read audiobooks, which I find fascinating.
I do.
Yeah. Do you consider, I have this debate with my wife all the time. Is listening to a book, does that count as reading a book?
That's a good question. Oh, God. You know, my instinct is to say no, because when you're reading, something different happens to you. Well, I don't know, actually. You're visualizing, like for me, when I'm reading, I'm visualizing the story in my head, you know? And it's one of the reasons I love narrating them, because I feel like I'm putting on my own play. I'm doing voices, I'm visualizing, and I'm really trying to bring the reader into it. But I guess when you're listening to it, you're also going down that kind of wormhole in your brain. So I guess it is kind of the same. I mean, if it's a nonfiction book and you're learning things, I think it definitely counts. Because isn't that the point of like a nonfiction? You want to learn something about, I don't know, turtles, global warming, cooking, whatever it is. You are absorbing information. So, I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, I 100% think it counts as reading. My wife tells me I'm wrong all the time. So, I think it, she's like, there you go, bragging about reading another book. And she said, it's not really reading. And I think it totally is.
You know, when you have kids, honestly, if it weren't for that as part of my career, I'd probably have read very few books in the last 7 years, given that I feel like I have no time with my children. And at night, forget it. If I'm in bed and I read one page, I'm asleep. So
sometimes
the only thing we can do is listen to a book when you're cleaning the house, mowing the lawn, driving to soccer practice. I mean, I definitely think if you have children under the age of like 15,
thank you. You have made my day. I cannot wait to brag to my wife about this. Now, do you ever read an audiobook? Do you know about the book before you start reading it? Or do you get into it and in your brain you go home and you go, man, this is some boring crap I'm reading at work today. It's not good. Because I feel like that would happen with me.
No, it's not like roulette. They don't just throw you a book and say, read it now. I do get the manuscript ahead of time. There's usually a pronunciation list. Sometimes there's even character descriptions. Sometimes there's an author's note. So there's more that goes into it than just sitting down and reading it. And what I do is, you know, I usually look through the book. I start reading it. I want to know what the tone is. I want to know what voices I'm going to do for the characters. How do they speak? How am I going to differentiate some people? Without making it too crazy, you know, if there's any accents involved, some people have accents, or like I just read one that was really fun, actually. It's a fiction, and it's called Wine People, and it's about people who make wine, but it all takes place in the fictitious world. And I did learn a lot about wine, which is cool. But, you know, there was a lot of French words in it, which I don't speak French, so that was difficult for me. And I had to really do some research and listen to how people say things. There's a good amount that goes into it. I mean, I will say I generally enjoy everything I read. I have read a few nonfictions that I just didn't know I was going to learn as much as I did about a certain topic. And I probably in my real life maybe would have not chosen that book. Mm-hmm. But at the end, I'm like, well, Yes, I'm now somewhat an expert on blah, blah, blah. So, you know, why not? So there are times like that. I mean, historical books in general are always a little more difficult because there's a lot of names and places involved, and that can become kind of tedious. I've also read some books that have medical jargon. And for any actor who's ever worked on a show like Grey's Anatomy, they can tell you that learning to speak that medical jargon and saying everything in a really easy, make it flow kind of way is actually really difficult. So Those books can, you know, can be challenging.
I'm definitely not a doctor, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. That's my doctor lingo that I have.
Okay.
You actually have a book that I want to read, and I've noticed it on Audible, and I'm going to download it. It's called Freaks, Leaks, and Dawson's Creek. It's a new one. I think it just dropped. And I want to read this. I've never seen Dawson's Creek, but I did watch Freaks and Geeks. So I remember that show. So I'm actually going to check that out. But how many hours do you spend in the studio reading? Do you just come in and read 8 hours straight? Because I would fall asleep.
About six. Usually about six. Yeah. It's, I like to start early. I like to get there. I drop my kids off at school and then I like to get in and start by like 9 or 9:30 and I'll read for, you know, 3 hours, 2 hours, 2.5, 3 hours. And then I'll take a half hour lunch break and then I'll get back in and I'll keep reading until 2 or 3 with a snack break every so often. And then I I'm done for the day and my voice is tired by that point. And then I go pick up my kids and do it all over again the next day. I really enjoy it. You know, I've done a lot of animation. I've done all kinds of voiceover projects, but this has been a really nice, like I fell into doing audiobook narration about 10 years ago. And I have found it to be really interesting and also very satisfying, especially when it's, you know, I read a lot of crime for whatever reason, a lot of mystery and a lot of crime. And I sort of enjoy those. There's always a level of suspense to it. And the characters are usually pretty interesting. And so I like being able to make up different voices, especially for characters I would never play in real life. Mm-hmm. Old women, men, you know, sergeants and all kinds of things. So it's kind of fun that way.
Now I'm just going to want to listen to all of your audiobook library you have. I want to hear your voices on there, so I'm going to tune into them.
Oh, yes. Please. Yeah. There's many.
Then I'm going to come home and brag to my wife that I knocked another book out today.
Yes, exactly.
While she's on page 60 struggling, I'm going to say, I finished that book already. I'm good. That's my move.
Three drives.
I finished it in three drives. So what's next for you?
Oh, gosh, what is next? Well, as you may know, we're having a little bit of a shutdown in our entertainment community these days. So we're all kind of waiting to see what's next. Hopefully there will be some resolution and some more directing on my end, maybe some more acting this year. I never say no. I always have that door open. In the meantime, I'm going to keep doing some audiobooks and voiceover work, which is one thing I can continue with. And then I've got a couple of short films and festivals that I directed last summer that are now starting to make the festival rounds. So I'm going to go out and enjoy the premieres of those and the screenings, which have been really fun. I've gotten a lot of nice attention to those. And I love being at festivals. It's such a cool environment to meet other directors and watch other people's films. And then I'm going to direct a theater piece with a very good friend of mine, Joseph Guerry, at the Gary Marshall Theater in October. It's a musical that we did last year. It's called Cindy and the Disco Ball. It's an all-ages family musical. It is a 1970s retelling of the classic Cinderella. And it deals with a protagonist, Cindy, who is finding her voice, much like the classic character Cinderella, and also deals with themes of art and the importance of art in our community and why we have to fight to keep it. So pretty relevant, I think.
And I knew one word came to my mind. You're a hustler in a good way. And, you know, I loved watching your YouTube where you had the reality show. It was probably 11 years ago, right? I think it was 11, 12 years ago. It was funny. Like you're very creative. You'll try anything. You had a podcast. You have a podcast. I mean, you have so many outlets that people should want to try to emulate.
Oh yeah. Thank you. I mean, you know, I've always, it's just always been my thing. It's like, if I wasn't feeling like I was getting the roles that I wanted, I wrote it for myself. And I shot it, and I was like, let's put it out there. Let's get it to a film festival. Let's see where it goes. Like, it wasn't always just about making a paycheck, but it was about carving a lane. And I think all of those times I've done that have just made me better at understanding production, understanding my job, you know, pivoting my role from being an actor to being a director. You know, I've choreographed for television. Like, if there's a job out there, I've almost done it. I've PA'd for friends. I've done costuming for friends on their things and their shorts. So I think it helps when you've gone out there and you've done your own stuff. I think it just helps you. It's like, you know, it's like the education of guerrilla filmmaking. Nothing will make you better than getting out there and doing it yourself. And I mean, that would always be my advice to anyone who's like, I just don't understand. Just don't know how to like get anyone to notice me. I'm like, well, no one's going to notice you sitting on a couch in your apartment. You got to get out and do something. Do a play, get in an acting class, meet some people, put up something, make a short, you know. These are the things we have. You have to be so self-generating in this business because there are so few people that walk in and just get the first thing they book. That is a fluke. That happens, but that's a fluke. And it doesn't happen. Even if you've been in this business a long time, it doesn't mean the jobs just keep coming. You know, most people who you see working, it's because they're working. You don't see all the jobs that you don't get. So, you know, that would tell you something too.
You are, like I said, a hustler, and you sound a lot like Jimmy DiResta. That episode, I chatted with Jimmy DiResta a while back. He said the same thing. You know, he was like, you don't want to be the one guy with one idea, and you take all your ideas. You got to be ready to fail, and you're not afraid of that. And you jump into it and you do it, and it's very entertaining. And I can't thank you enough for coming on and chatting with me for a few minutes.
Oh my gosh. I was more than happy to. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. And good luck.
Thanks. Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that chat as much as I did with Christine Lakin. I've got to go refresh my step-by-step knowledge. I'm going to be listening to Keenan Lake and give you deja vu. I want to hear more about Step by Step. I listened to their podcast on a flight. I was just sitting there in the airplane, just tuning in to Christine and Stacy going, I love this. They need to have me on there so I can talk with them about Step by Step. That they won't, but they should. Anyway, hope you enjoyed it here at Hopecast. Thank you, Hopecast, for making this podcast possible. Thank you for listening to Christine Lakin and me. If you like our show, make sure to like and subscribe on iTunes and Spotify. We want you to follow us. Leave us a review. Tell us how much you love us. Follow us on Instagram, Work Advice for Me. We have other shows you can listen to. We've got Breaking News with Brad and B. We have The Everyday Runner with Aaron Mayer. We have Movie Torture. Yes, Movie Torture is a part of our network. So if you like movies and you want to hear them made fun of, be sure to join us on Movie Torture and listen. We'll like telling you. So I don't think we'll have another show. I don't know. We've got some more coming up, so stay tuned. But now I have to go downstairs, tell my wife I love her, and eat some coconut cake. Tell someone you love them today. It really means a lot. That's my challenge to you. My name's Brad. This is Work Advice for Me. I'll catch you on the flip side.